really appreciate you being here tonight. This is one of those cool wintry nights. I was telling some people, came through some real rain getting here back out in the country. And I think it's supposed to be quite cool and rainy or sleety or snowy or something later on. But I appreciate the fact that you braved the weather and you're here. I think that says something about your interest in what we're talking about, and I do appreciate it. Philip, would you mind leading us in a prayer as we begin?
Righteous Father, we're so thankful unto you for this and other day that you bless us with. We're thankful, Father, for all the many blessings of life that you give to us daily. We thank you, Father, for this hour that we have to come to discuss the business of the church and the problems of teaching. We pray that you'll bless us and give us the wisdom and the understanding we need so we can better serve you in the kingdom. Forgive us, Father, for our many sins in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you. We're talking tonight about curriculum. I will attempt to do some of my world class writing on the board. When you see the way I write, you'll know that is said absolutely in jest. I'll make it as simple as possible. On one side of the equation, we have the T for teacher. On the other end, we have the S for student. Now, somewhere, we've got to try to connect. You remember we had that little drawing of the lines called and the crossing point that sometimes we never really can connect. We go along on our level, and the student goes along on his level, and the two never come together, and we just spend time together in class, mm-hmm. and nothing really ever happens that's worthwhile or beneficial. Here's where curriculum comes in. Curriculum is how we transmit the material that we have in mind to the students. What if you don't have any curriculum, either written, in your mind, whatever? What happens if you don't have any real curriculum?
Kind of lost.
All right. Chuck says it's kind of a loss.
No purpose or direction.
No purpose, no direction. Therefore, little learning. Curriculum is vitally important. Curriculum is the vehicle whereby we get the information, the material, the things that we want students to know to them. Now, there's a question about that. Is it our master or is it our servant? It should be our servant. Do you think for some people curriculum becomes the master?
Yes.
How would that be demonstrated in the class?
You mentioned that one. Somebody mentioned it one time. Is that feel like you're forced to get through a particular lesson,
yes.
at a particular time, no matter what it takes to get through.
Absolutely. So you have this much material. Whatever, I've got to get through that. I don't have time for questions. Those teachable moments just come and go and nothing is done with them. And as a result, you rush, and it's a garbage or an information dump, not a garbage dump, an information dump, and not a lot's accomplished. Ruth mentioned another one. Da 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 da. It's in the book. I have to say it. The other one of that is true. The other end of that is true, too. If it's not in the book, I can't say it. I am bound, I am chained to the curriculum. I maintain that curriculum is a servant. You're the teacher. You're transmitting the message to the student. Use curriculum, but let it serve your purpose. Don't let it determine your purpose. Let it serve your purpose. Now on page 31, we're going to look at four different types of curriculum. Now I think you'll see which one of these we use most often in our congregations, and the reason I think is fairly obvious. There is curriculum that is called uniform grading. It is where the same Bible portion is taught to each age group. Can you immediately see some advantages of that? What would the advantages of uniform grading be? Yeah. It really, you're absolutely right, it is really an advantage for the family. Because whatever junior studying, mom and dad study. And so everybody who goes to Bible class that day is studying the same material that makes devotions at home really great, discussions at home a wonderful thing. So there's a lot of advantage to uniform grading. Can you see the disadvantage of uniform grading?
Some Bible stories are very, well, you know, like Sodom and Gomorrah, I guess that was the young
grader, right? Yeah, you're absolutely right. My usual example is David and Bathsheba. Now, you're going to teach that to the kindergarten? Yeah, I don't think so. And you're going to talk about that at home in your devotional with your wee children? I don't think so. So there are some Bible stories, some content, that you just can't really use that way. It's not appropriate for some age groups. I think it also has an advantage as far as preaching is concerned. Now, I have a theory here, and I'll try it out on you. I think that preaching is a part of the educational program of the church. As a matter of fact, for lots of folks, the preacher is the educational department of the church. Would you agree?
Yes.
These are the people who come in, and all they hear is the preacher. Mm-hmm. And if they come for class at all on Sunday morning and sit in the auditorium, in most congregations, the preacher's teaching it. Mm-hmm. And then they hear him preach. And so for them, their whole idea of the educational program of the church is the preacher. That's why I strongly encourage preachers to make sure that what they're preaching fits into the overall purpose of the educational program of the church. That they're not doing one thing in Bible class and he's doing another thing, and those two never complement each other. Now, I realize that you cannot preach what's being studied every time, but there are situations when you can, especially if you're using uniform grading, and that would be a tremendous benefit. I see advantages, I see disadvantages. What do you think one of the biggest disadvantages is in a very practical way? Now, we've talked about some on both sides, but I think there's one just in a practical way. It requires a whole lot more work because not much is written that is uniform graded. What you buy when you order material is not uniform graded. Not at all. It's really departmental graded. Number three on the list. And so that means you're going to have to get, now there's some material out there, but you're really going to have to work hard to do it. I think in especially in small congregations, uniform grading is a tremendous plus. Because you can do the teaching through the pulpit, through the class, everybody's studying the same material generally. It will require a lot of work out of your teachers. Because you're probably going to hand them a sheet that has the lesson on it and say, now go make it age appropriate. And there are some teachers that can do that. There are some that have no idea how to start that process. If it's not spelled out, they can't do it. So it does require a lot more of your teaching, of your teachers. I have worked with one congregation early on that used uniform grading, and it worked very well. It was very successful, but not many congregations use it at all.
Do you use different things for Wednesday and Sunday, or do you use the Sunday, follow through the Wednesday?
That can be done either way. You may have a lot of places on Sunday. They try to, assuming they have the same students, and in most small congregations you do. You would teach the lesson on Sunday, make the applications on Wednesday night. That's not an across-the-board way you have to do that, but often congregations do that. And now for us at Greasy Ridge, we have. I got a call today from a lady somewhere far away who wanted to sell us curriculum for our children's classes. And I thought, well, lady, you know, for the three or four kids we've got, that's not something we're interested in doing. So in a very small congregation, you have problems even having classes. And so teachers just kind of have to do their thing anyway. The second kind is unified grading. Here, different content related by a single theme is taught to each age group. For instance, everybody this Sunday is studying faith. That would be the theme. Now, what would each class be expected to do in regard to that theme?
Study faith.
Yeah, in some way, study faith. Can you see immediately an advantage of the unified grading over the uniform grading? You could make it more age appropriate, couldn't you? Yeah. You probably wouldn't study the faith of Rahab in your kindergarten class, but that would really be a great class for adults. So you can make it more age appropriate. Now, what would be another advantage of it? Have an idea?
It still would apply to the family.
Yes, absolutely. The family could still have their devotions, they could still talk about it, as long as they were in that general theme of faith. It would also be a tremendous opportunity for the preacher, because he knows that this Sunday everybody's studying faith, so I would think that he would preach on faith, something relative to faith. And that way it is kind of the double whammy. I often compare it to the second nail in a board. You put the first nail in the board, that's pretty good, but if you really want it to stick, you put that second nail in there, and I think he gives the second nail to it and nails down the subject and is helpful to the program. What's the disadvantage of it, you see?
Well, sometimes a theme is not as specific as a certain portion of the Bible.
Yes.
So you're giving general themes and not as much direction or specificity.
Ooh, I like that word, specificity. Sometimes the theme you're right is just too big. Even faith, my goodness, you know, that's a monster theme running through the Bible. And so some themes are just too big to really cover except in an extended period of time. I think there's another disadvantage. You really have a limited number of themes. Now, I'm not saying that you don't have a lot, but you have a limited number. And so you're doing this thematically, and you're going into 3 or 4 years down the road, and what do you find? You're really having trouble finding a theme.
Start over again.
Yeah, you'd have to start over again. So uniform and unified grading are not used very much by our people at all. I think each has an advantage. I think where you have the cooperation of good teachers, that either one of these would be really helpful. But it's going to require a lot of work. You're going to have to do a lot in getting your own material ready. And you throw that at teachers that you already have trouble getting, and what do you suppose that's going to do? You're going to have more trouble getting teachers. Yeah, you really will. I know a few congregations that have written their own material and have done that, but it takes a lot of cooperation. It takes somebody who has some skills in writing the material. It takes the input of all the teachers. It takes the willingness of all the teachers, the cooperation of all the teachers, and that's a hard thing to get. So because of that, I just mentioned it because that's what's used, but not by our people very much at all.
I guess, I don't know how you express opinion or not, but here, congregation say that we're doing our own material, but to me it's kind of like, I said, I'm going to build my own car. When there's always other people who've been building cars, is that a fair comparison? Or I mean,
kind of, sort of. Is that a good answer? Kind of, sort of. I was gung-ho at one time in my past to write material for a congregation where I was working. And then I found a book entitled Before You Write Your Own Material. That's the truth. That's the name of the book. It's a little paperback book, Before You Write Your Own Material. And I read it, and I thought again. The advantage, if you have the skills, is you can really make it appropriate to your congregation. Curriculum that's printed, guess who it's written for?
Everybody.
The middle. Okay? If you've got 10, 11, and 12-year-olds or grades together for your high school class, it's written for people right there in the middle. What's the problem with that? Those may not be the people you have in your class. You may have a group of people who are relatively new to the whole Bible study thing, and what are they saying about the material? It's too hard. We don't know that stuff. What if you get a bunch of, your best students, they've grown up in the church, their mother and dad are faithful Christians, they're bright kids, and they get that material, what are they going to say? It's too easy. We've had this stuff before. Now, that's where a teacher has to say, it's not my master, it's my servant. And I will take it to whatever level it needs to be taken to. If I need to make it more simple, I'll make it more simple. If I need to make it a little more challenging, I'll make it a little more challenging. But I'm telling you the truth, folks, in the years that I've done this, I've not found a lot of teachers who are willing to pay the price and take the time to do that. They'd rather just read the book and do what the book says. So I think that's one of the problems with it, writing your own material. The advantage is you can make it appropriate to your congregation. But it takes skills. It really does. Like, what do kindergartners need to know? What are they able to know? And if you're lucky and you have somebody in your congregation that has early childhood development background and skills in that and can help with that, that's wonderful. When I worked with Carnes Church, we had some ladies, two of them, who had master's degrees in early childhood development. And so for the cradle roll kindergarten, I think one first and second grade maybe, they wrote the material. And it was superb material. I mean, they knew what they were doing. But I would think the average congregation is not ready to accept the responsibility of doing that. I think there are advantages if you have the personnel. But then, again, you've got to have the cooperation of the teacher, because when you buy material, you get the visuals, you get all of that stuff. If you're writing your own material, guess what you have to do?
You
got to come up with it. Now, I will tell you that if you are computer literate, you can find more stuff online than you could ever use in your class. We did on the Ridge our one-day vacation Bible school, a Saturday, Super Saturday thing, and we wrote our own material. Got on the internet. We found word searches. We found pictures to color. We found all kinds of things. And the teachers took hold of that thing and made their own material. It was great. But that was for one day. That's a little different matter than every week for a year. Did I just talk all around that, or did I say anything that related to it? Okay. Departmental grading is the kind of material that we use. That is different Bible content provided for each department. And the departments are preschool, primary, junior, junior, senior, high, and adults. And the Bible content is provided for each of those. Now, can you see an advantage of that?
Yes.
In theory, at least, can you see an advantage of that?
It could serve the building block. You know, stuff from lower level food and up to more meatier food.
That's exactly right. Supposedly, it's written by people who know what preschoolers need, what they're capable of learning, what they need. Therefore, the material will get them ready for the primary department. So, in theory, it is a building block program, and it is age appropriate, in theory. Now, what's the downside of that? Where does the theory sometimes run into problems?
You don't start at preschool. You come into the program at an older level.
Yeah. Like we were talking about last week with the adult program, that a child may come in the middle of this, in the junior program, and doesn't know the things that would have been taught in the program early on, and so you've got a blank sheet of paper, and that's hard to fill in all the spaces sometimes. So that is a problem. I think another part of the problem is that your kids may not be where that material is written, and that means the teacher has to kick in and do things that he or she might not otherwise have to do. So there are advantages and there are disadvantages of this. But it is the kind of material I suspect that you folks here use, and most congregations I've worked with, it is the kind that they use. A fourth kind is close grading. It's where different Bible content is provided for pupils in each public school grade. Now, why don't we use that?
We don't have any teachers.
Well, we don't have enough teachers.
Sometimes we don't have any students.
Yeah. We don't have enough students, classrooms, or teachers to pull that one off. I've only worked with one congregation in my life that we had enough students to pull that off. And our educational complex had 50 rooms in it. You know, it was just like a schoolhouse. And and sometimes you would have two, maybe first grade classes because you had a lot of first graders. But in most congregations, you just don't have enough students to do that. And I don't know very many that even try to use close grading. Now, it has advantages. Because if you've got a class of 4th, 5th, and 6th graders, and you're getting departmental graded material for that, it's written right there in the fifth grade. Maybe too much for your fourth graders, maybe too easy for your sixth graders, and so you have a lot of work to do trying to make it age appropriate. In close grading, in theory, you're right on target with that group, with that age group or that grade level. But again, we generally don't have enough teachers, classrooms, and students to pull off close grading. I want you to be familiar with those. The real issue is when we go to get curriculum, how do we choose what curriculum to get? Now, I'm going to give you five things on page 32, but tell me how it usually is decided what curriculum to use. And be brutally honest.
Price.
Yeah. We want not to spend a whole lot of money. Okay? So price is considered. Now, it's not the only thing, but a lot of people want to know how much does it cost. And as in a car, the more bells and whistles that you get, the more it costs. If you want a car that's got four-way power seats and power windows and climate control and all of that stuff, guess what?
We'll pay for it.
Yeah, get ready to pay for it. Exactly right. So if you want all the bells and whistles in your curriculum, be prepared to pay for it. And what do most teachers want?
All the bells and whistles.
Why do they want all the bells and whistles?
Make it easier.
It's easier.
They don't
want
to have to do
the wrong material. One curricula was billed as enough material for 2 hours. Now, to a teacher, how does that sound?
Wow.
Yeah, great. Because it tells me everything to do, and that set has even the time. Use 10 minutes to do this, use 5 minutes to do this. This is the song you sing. These are the Bible verses you sing. Here is a tape if you don't know the songs. And everything you just spelled out, it is expensive. How else do we choose curriculum? Being brutally honest.
Somebody's used it someplace else.
Yeah, I saw somebody else using this, and boy, I surely did like it. And so we don't know anything about it, but Church XYZ over here is using it, and they like it, and they recommended it, and I looked at it, and I think it's okay, and we're going to use it. I will tell you how I've seen some people do it. Get one of our catalogs from one of our book suppliers and go down and that looks pretty good and just order it. That is one of the most dangerous things you can do. And I'll tell you why. Do you realize that when it says published by, that doesn't mean what you think it means? Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Why do smaller publishing houses not actually publish their own curriculum? That's right. For the bells and whistles, for full color. If you know anything about printing, full color is very, very, very expensive. And then you buy the artwork, and you get all of the materials together. You've paid a fortune. So what most people do is they contract with a large publishing company, and they have limited rewrite on the material. But what is that major publishing company trying to do with that material?
They can fit all the groups possibly can.
Sell it to everybody. Meet as many people's supposed needs as they can. And so we may not be the only people in town using it. Denominational churches may be using it as well. For instance, 21st Century Christian. Do you know who publishes their material? Now, who would you think? Just me saying that. You'd think so, wouldn't you? Try Standard. Their material is Standard material. You know who does Standard?
Christian Church.
Christian Church.
You can tell they're reading their letter.
Uh-huh, absolutely. It is Christian Church material.
Christmas lesson.
Yep. So Standard is publishing material that their folks, all branches, quote unquote, of the Restoration Movement, they want to sell it to everybody. They want to sell it to disciples. They want to sell it to Christian churches. They want to sell it to Church of Christ. And if some Baptist or Methodist or somebody else picks it up, that's fine with them. So they write across the board to try to make it as agreeable to as many people as they can. And you pointed out, that's one reason you'll find the holiday thing in there. Around December the 25th, you're going to find a lesson on the birth of Christ. Why?
It's printed for everybody concerned.
That's what most people want. That's what they expect. Around Easter, you're going to find a lesson on the resurrection, because that's what most of the people who buy their material want. Now, 21st Century Christian has some rewriting. They can say, we really put our foot down on this, and we don't want that. But they can't rewrite the whole thing, because that's just too cost prohibitive. And so they're not allowed to do that. Sweet material. You would think, okay, Sweet Publishing, they do Sweet material. No, they don't. Do you know who does Sweet? What's one of the largest mega denominational publishing houses you can think of?
Zondervan.
No, it's not Zondervan. No. These people do Bibles. They have Zondervan and now they do other materials too.
Baker or somebody?
No. No. I was going to tell you, and I've forgotten. I was hoping, you know, somebody will think of it. Because I would know it if I heard it. But it is called, it is billed as an undenominational group, but has really strong Baptist leanings. And as a result, you're going to get premillennialism.
Moody Press?
No.
Like Lambert?
No, Lambert is probably the most conservative material we've got out there. Yeah, I'll think of it, because I had it right on.
Not Thomas Hilton?
No. Or Thomas Miller, either. Or Thomas anybody. I'll think of it. And guess what materials are most widely used in Churches of Christ? Across the board. And I got this from suppliers. I called and said, what is your leading, the material you sell the most of to our congregation? 21st Century Christian Fall of the Sweet. Now, why would you think?
It's colorful and pretty.
Colorful. It's beautiful. You talk about bells and whistles, they've got it all. There are a couple that are fairly well known in our brotherhood that are written by the church, for the church. A Gospel Advocate is one of those. Now, the problem I have with Gospel Advocate is they don't really have a program that goes from, I started at the top, better go from the bottom, from kindergarten through adults. You know, you can go so far with this material, then you got to switch and get this material, and you got to switch and get this material, but they don't have the continuous thread. Somebody tried to make a big deal that it really wasn't their material because they published the art, or they purchased the artwork. And I thought, yeah, I mean, that's silly. That doesn't affect the lesson or anything. But Gospel Advocate is material that is widely used. People have a lot more confidence in it. And I'll tell you one of the reasons why in a minute. Well, let's just discuss that. It has to do with the translation it's based on. If you get into Sweet or 21st Century Christian, what do you think the translation that most people want is? NIV. Mm-hmm. What do you use here? I hope I'm not getting myself in a hole I can't get out of here.
Well, the Bible study guide.
Okay.
It's written by Mary Baker out of Arkansas.
Okay, I'm familiar with that. And so you're basically using a uniform grading thing. Okay. But the Gospel Advocate is based on the New King James. And a lot of people find that a whole lot more digestible than the NIV. You mentioned Lambert. The most conservative material in the country is Lambert.
I don't know if it still were. I know they
did one time. They write their material, and they write it strictly for Churches of Christ. And as a result, guess what translation they use?
JSV or King James?
King James. Guess which is the least appealing of all of the curricula?
Lambert.
I talked to a Lambert representative one time, because I used to, when I went out and did teachers' workshops, I took samples of material to try to illustrate these points. And I said, would you ship me a box of your out-of-date material? And they were very nice. All of the major distributors did that for me. And I would put out a table and say, here is the curriculum, and here are the strengths and weaknesses, and here's why I would prefer and recommend this over that. And I said on the phone, when are you going to straighten up that, get more up-to-date artwork? And she said, "Mr. Miller, do you know how expensive that is?" And so you still got people wearing Nehru jackets with bell-bottom pants and driving 57 Chevys, you know, because that's the artwork they've had for years. Now, they have upgraded some, and it is better. But Lambert has very few bells and whistles. It is very scriptural, but most teachers don't like it.
We had it one time here, and this claim there wasn't enough activity.
Yeah,
too hard to prepare for, because nothing was done for him.
That's exactly right, and that's the complaint, because you really have to work. Yeah, you really have to work, because it doesn't have a lot of things. The one thing I like about it, not only because I think it's the most conservative out there of major publishing groups, is that it is on a three-year rotation. And once you get started with Lambert, you buy your teacher's manuals and your visuals one time. And the theory is that you should not have a kid in any class more than 3 years in a row, or you've got a real problem, you know. So even if you've got fourth, fifth, and sixth grades together, they're going in 3 years run through that. And so you can start back over and use that material. And I think that's an advantage. It is the most economical of the material. So just be aware of the fact that when you read it's published by somebody, and you say, "Oh, I know somebody there, it's on their board of directors, or I've got some of the books from them." Don't assume that that means their material is what you need. Let's address the subject that was brought up over here about the allusions to Christmas and Easter. Not overtly saying Christ was born on Christmas, but just around December the 25th, you're going to have a lesson on the birth of Christ. What are you going to do about that? Is that going to be a deal breaker? Or can congregations choose to use that in other ways? What do you think about that?
I think you can teach the birth of Christ and work it right into any kind of lesson.
Here's one of those things that I often comment on with the same line I've used before in class. We argue for congregational autonomy, and it scares us to death when somebody practices it, especially if they're not practicing it just like we are. I think an eldership could sit down and decide we're going to use a material that has that lesson in it. Okay, how are you going to use it? We're going to use it at the date that it's scheduled. We're going to use it to teach that we really don't know when Jesus was born. Most people think he was born on December the 25th. In fact, he was not. We don't know, but it's really good to study about his birth because that was a really important event. If an eldership makes that decision and all other things with the curriculum being equal, is that not their business?
So use it as a servant, not a master.
Yes, yes. I know some, and this one I think tickles me, but if an eldership wants to do that, I think it's fine. They teach it out of rotation. They save it for another time in the year and teach it, if that's the way they want to do it. I mean, I think that is a congregational decision. Now, if it says Jesus was born on December the 25th, for me that's a deal breaker, because that's just inaccurate. That's just not right. And I would not have anything to do with material like that. But you will find congregations deciding that they will use material that has those lessons in it. But making those corrections. I think that's their business. I probably wouldn't prefer doing that, but I would defend somebody's right to. Yes, Mark?
I'm sorry. I had a mother come to me afterwards one time and
yeah.
say, "Will you teach my child?"
Yes. Course? Yes. Yes. And that is a problem. That sometimes people don't understand what you're doing, so I would think full disclosure would be appropriate there if you made that decision. Yes, Mark, you were going to.
Yeah, I was going to make a comment along that line, basically. That I figure, in that sense, I mean, if people are talking about it as far as the world's concerned, mm-hmm. you know, anyway, and it has to do with Christ, then why not address and set the matter straight on it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And see what, as long as you tell everybody the reason why you're doing it up front. You know?
Yeah. I'm one of those preachers that takes advantage of holidays anyway. Around Christmas, I'll preach a sermon about the birth of Christ and make the point that we don't really know. Galatians 4:4 is as close as it comes in the fullness of time. God sent forth His Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem those that were under the law. And all I know is when time was right. I know it wasn't December the 25th, and I'll probably talk about why we know that it's not that. And we're not commanded to choose a day and use that in celebration, but let's never forget that the baby was born in Bethlehem and changed the world and changed people in the world. So I think you can take advantage of the situation because that's what people are thinking about anyway.
Well, I think when you tend to ignore those things, you create more problems because it's like, well, you're uncomfortable handling
I agree, Mark, and I wonder sometimes why we're not comfortable with just saying, you know, this is the truth on the subject, and here's why we do what we do. And I think you can celebrate Christmas in ways other than as a religious holiday that are meaningful and enjoyable as family and that kind of thing.
And a lot of times there are going to be people there that's the only time they'll hear it.
Mm-hmm. So what are the guidelines? First of all, foremost, biblical accuracy. I want it to be in the statements that it makes to be biblically accurate. Which means, before we use any curriculum, what should we do? We should look it over. Absolutely. Let's have somebody who has the time and the knowledge to sit down with it and look through it and see that it is biblically accurate. Let's not use something that teaches falsehood. Okay? Appropriate to the age level. Now, that's a tough one because I tried to make the point earlier that it tries to hit the middle tier. And that may not be appropriate as written to your group, to your class, which means you have to take it as the servant and make it appropriate. Now, I don't know. I hesitate to say this, but I think that most teachers can do that if they spend the time. Now, I think some don't want to spend the time. And those are the ones who want to pick up the quarterly on the way out of the house. They haven't seen it since last week when they came in from church, but they want to pick it up and go teach it. And that's a mockery. You can't do that. But is the material appropriate to the age level? Is it teachable? I want to know about the teachability. Can an average teacher, using reasonable preparation time, teach that material? Now, I understand that you've got some terms there you might have to work on, average and reasonable. But if it is so difficult that you know that 75% of your teachers don't have the time or the ability to make that appropriate to their classes, guess what you probably ought to do? Get some other curriculum, because that's just not going to work. I want to know if it's teachable. Can you pick it up, study the lesson, look up the use resources, spend some time with it, and teach it? What's the appearance? Here's one where I think in our brotherhood, and in lots of churches, not just churches of Christ, but lots of churches, it's okay with us if things don't look nice. But when people come in to look us over, what do they want to see? The things look nice.
Well, should it be okay with us if it doesn't look nice?
No, but we do a lot of things. I preached in Canton, Ohio one time. Had a good ministry there. Was there 7.5 years. Loved the congregation. Didn't like Canton, but loved the congregation. And we had a water leak in one of the halls, just as you came in one of the doors. And it happened to be the door that was off of the underpass in front, so most of the people got out there. You walked in, and the roof had caved in inside. And it went on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And I finally said something to one of our elders, who was also the maintenance man for the building. I said, Don't you think that looks a little bad? He said, I said, we've gotten used to it. Well, we had. It didn't keep any of us from going to church there. But when we wanted to try to get people and influence them with the church, and you walk through and that's the first thing you see, what kind of opinion do you form?
Negative.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why the yard ought to be mowed and the building ought to be kept up and the walls ought to be painted. And I mean, you have to use what you have and you get better, but there's no excuse for dirty, filthy, unkept building and grounds and material that's mimeographed and got marks through it and that kind of stuff. There's no excuse for that at all. I get some bulletins, and this isn't about bulletins, but may I just vent? I get bulletins that I don't even want to read because it just gives to me such a negative impression about that congregation. When you do your best, you're going to get a typo in the bulletin. Okay, you really are. I proofread it, my wife proofreads it behind me, I proofread it behind her, and inevitably something will get through, slip through on us. But I get stuff, misspelled words, and it's crooked on the page, and the print's blurred, and everything is a cutout from Bulletin Digest. And I think, what kind of impression does that make on people who walk through the doors and get a copy of the bulletin? I think we ought to. I think appearance is valuable. And then we assess the strengths and weaknesses on the next two or three pages. Beginning at 33, you have three pages of more specific guidelines. And I think that if I were going to choose curriculum, that I would order sample copies. I would sit down with them. I would take this evaluation. I would go over the material and see how it stacked up. And while money might be the a consideration, I would not let it be the driving force. I think we cannot skimp on good material for our classes. We just simply can't do that.
And so, it may have been mentioned, but anymore with the internet, there's a lot of things that's been reviewed. And we're looking for some books here.
Yes.
I found a lot of commentaries and comments on different some books. I'm sure there's anything for some materials that you can find. And that kind of takes you to the hot spots pretty quickly.
Yes.
They point out four or five places with problems.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Anybody else so far?
I was going to make a comment about songbooks too. I think we've gotten maybe a little bit better recently, but most of the songbooks I've seen, there's no set standard for one page to the next. Most of the songbooks that we use in the church, like it looks like it's been copied and pasted from different places. You know, pretty much every songbook I've used in the church has been that way, where there's a different font for for everything, and even a different looking staff and everything like that. So.
Yeah, we tend to, unfortunately, do things as cheaply as we can, and I think it comes back to haunt us. Yeah. I was someplace, well, I hope it wasn't here. I hate to tell my stories and don't remember where it happened, but I picked up the songbook and several songs were stamped, "Do not use this song." And I thought, well, somebody had gone through and that wasn't here, was it?
We talked about it.
Do not use this song because it, and it was all through there. I mean, it was. I understand there are a handful that everybody wonders about, but this was just, this songbook was eaten up with them. So I don't know who had made that decision, but it was like, it would have been easier to say, sing this song than it would have been the other. You got the material handed out to everybody, Mark?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mark was my helper here. I made some copies today. I went back through some of my computer files and tried to get some forms for you that you might find interesting. One of the things that we asked people to do was to assess the classes they were in. And so the first page is survey for students, We did it for high school and adults. They were asked to rank the things 1 through 5, 5 being excellent. They were asked to give us the greatest strengths, the greatest weaknesses, and to offer suggestions. And many people took this absolutely seriously and gave us some great insights. If you don't check up on how you're doing, I think you can find yourself going in a direction you didn't realize you were going in. I want to know, how are we doing? Do the people who sit in the classes like the classes? Do they think they're helpful? Is the material good? Are the teachers prepared? Is the class long enough? Too long? Do you think your teacher is qualified?
Are these done during the class?
We did them the last night of the class. So
they finish them in the class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. If you let them take them home, you never get them back.
Who? I guess they didn't put their names on them.
No. Okay. And they were put in a box.
Who got to see the results of these?
I did, and then I gave them to our elders, and a not the actual thing, but a summation to the teacher. As a teacher, I want to know. Maybe it's because for 20 years at the School of Preaching, after every class, every quarter, I got an evaluation. And some of them, it was like, oh, my. Am I that bad? Because, you know, somebody always slices and dices you. And if it's one person, you don't pay much attention to that. But if it's an across-the-board thing, I mean, that's something a teacher needs to know. The other one behind it is for the teachers. How do you feel about the class? Did you have the available supplies? Did you have good supervision? Did you have support of the leadership of the congregation? Did you feel like the parents supported you? So we asked the teachers to evaluate the class as well. Then, each quarter, we had a teacher's quarterly class evaluation. Asking the teachers to give us an overall feeling of how we were going in our program. We constantly wanted to know how we're doing. Tell us how we're doing. What changes do we need to make? And then I gave you a document that we prepared early on to try to set the tone for the educational program. I don't know what happened here on this one. I don't have a page of it. Let's see if I have it in other ones. Well, I wasn't going to say anything like that. Actually, nobody has it, I'll bet. Yeah, I have a blank page. There's supposed to be something on... okay, here's the 5-year plan for the adult program in the Carnage Church of Christ. Do you have that?
Yes.
Okay. And it says that our overall goal was to use trained, capable, and faithful Christian teachers, 2 Timothy 2:2, to bring people to maturity in Christ, Romans 8:29, through the teaching of the truth and love, Ephesians 4:15. That was our overall goal of the whole program. Our specific goals were to have the Carnes adult program known for the quality of the teaching staff, the design and ability of individual classes to meet the varied needs and understanding levels of the students, and an emphasis on both information, facts, and application. And you'll see how we broke the program down into basic classes, practical classes, Old Testament textual, New Testament textual, topical sermons, or topical classes, and in-depth studies. Here's my view on all of this. Whether you plan for it or not, will you not be somewhere in your educational program in 5 years? Yes. Would you like to look at it at the end of the 5 years and say, well, here we are, we didn't plan to get here, and I don't know how we got here, and I'm not real sure where we are? Or would you rather on this end say, in 5 years, here's where we want to be? I think that's the question that drives you. In 5 years or whatever your period is, where do we want to be? Then what's the next question? How do we get there? And then you begin to plug in classes to help you meet the goal. I think you start with a goal. Okay? We're out of time. I appreciate you being here. Yes.
I you mentioned that there's only one question about regular teachers meeting.
Yes.
We don't do that here as far as, you know, you know, each quarter set of materials here, and Brad may say a few things, but we don't. How long did you hold those at Clarence?
Monthly. And we had them on a Sunday prior to church, asked them to come in, like at 5 o'clock. We always had an instructional part. Okay, here's something to learn. Here's a hint. Here's a keeper, you know. This will help you. We ask the individual classes for reports of how they were doing, what their needs were. We talked about our goals, what was coming up in spatial arrangements, if it was a holiday or anything like that, how we were working that in. We had that monthly. Yes. Now I tell you, they were not originally, because it was basically, okay, anybody got any questions, anybody got any needs, and there was no real agenda, so we developed an agenda. I should have brought that. I have a copy of the agenda we brought in each meeting. If I can remember it, I'll bring it along.
Now, the other thing, as you look at this one place, I think, this is the equivalent place, that's one you talked about.
Uh-huh.
It became real popular in management. Sure. You know, it's one of those topics for one class.
No, that was for the quarter.
Each one of those would have been a topic? How to make appropriate visits would last for 13 weeks?
Yeah. Because everybody had to make a visit who took that and come in and report on the visit. Oh, and the things that they ran into that they didn't quite know how to handle. If it was a good visit or if it was a bad visit and why. I mean, there was actually homework to do.
That'd be good.
Yes. Yeah. Like if we were studying hospital visits, your assignment for this week is make a visit to somebody in the hospital. Come back and tell us how it went. Yeah, my theory is that we just don't develop classes to really deal with what people need.
I like that. Semester, is there anything outstanding that you think?
No, I got the list of classes, and I didn't this week was able to get with Brad, but I will do that and sit down. If I'm going to teach, I'd like to teach Galatians. It's one of my favorite books. Get back to do a textual. And then we'll talk with Brad about what's available. But I'll send that to you all for your approval, and then we'll go with
it.
Oh, is that right?
But we've had one. You know, kind of what he's reviewing and then talk about seeing and what we're trying to do and trying to learn today. Their objections to today's class. I'm much more conscientious now.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm just trying to know, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's what I was telling.
Yeah. The most effective way to learn.
And people, we just assume that people know those things, but you have to learn them at some point. And I think most teachers are ready for that. They want that. And they're willing to cooperate with you if you just approach them and say, here's our program. You can't let it fly by the seat of its pants. You've got to really have a program.
That's what you said there reminds me. That's somebody writing in for advice. That's the thing about going back to school, because I'm going to college, I'll be 35 years old. Says, how old will you be in 4 years if you don't
yes.
go to college?
Right.
And that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
If you're around, you're going to something's going to happen.
Yeah. We're going to be somewhere in 5 years in our program. Why not plan it and go from and work the plan then?
I noticed in the gospel advocacy, that was a little quarterly thing.
Uh-huh.
This is last one. I was in some elder in Oklahoma who had written books. I think graduating high school seniors. A list of things. And the results were.
Nope.
And he's not like the setting up. The elders are setting up standards that. Basically, I would say proficiency. This time, you graduate from high school group.
Yes.
County high.
Yes.
You need to know each apostle and something about their life, and you need to know this and this and that.
I think that we ought to sit down and say, by the time our kids graduate from high school, they will be found salvation and scriptures as well. They will be able to talk about the church as far as the development of it, the beginnings of it, the worship, and that kind of thing. And we would have goals, and we would make sure that those are taught. Because we're getting kids out of high school, and they can't even tell you what to do to be saved.
Did you ask the classes that start like a conversation about who was
Moses?
What did he do?
We don't teach that anymore.
Well, I really enjoyed this.
Thank you.
Any issues with the next semester, let me know.
Okay, when I get a chance to talk with Red, I will send you an email.
I usually teach like October, November, January, February, March.